Hard Place, a novel by R.A. Jacobson. Listener discretion is advised. Contains strong language, violence, and some adult situations.
Chapter 66. Song buried inside him. It was quiet, but filled with hope. John continued to play number 12, the last song, and he knew he had completed his task. He knew then he was a guitar player who had woken the devil and made him smile. As the last note fell from the guitar, he knew everyone in the room would live the rest of their lives saddened by the weight of this night, becoming the seed of sadness and unhappiness for the world. One more step from the light into the sharp-toothed darkness. The thin man in black smiled broadly and nodded to John and his newly shiny guitar. Then, without deciding to, John played another song. His song, a song buried inside him, the one that had been there all this time, number 13. It was the song that had pushed him to play. His fingers bleeding, he cried. He cried for all the hours he had lost, playing for the devil, hoping to wake him. He cried for all the people here who would never again know happiness. But mostly, he cried because he had gotten his dream.
Chapter 67. Matt meets Mr. White. Matt walked to the police station with the tall gray lady at his side. No one saw them, and they saw no one. At the station, she stopped and gestured for him to continue on. Through the doors of the police station, he glanced back and saw the dark shape of a moose disappear into an alley. He walked up the cement steps to the double doors, passing two police officers who walked right past him as if he was not there. Through the station, he took the elevator as he had done before, down to the morgue. It was dimly lit and empty. Alan's skinned body still lay on the cold metal table in the center of the room, with a sheet pulled back. "Ah, oh, Alan, what's going on?" Matt looked down at his friend. "Mr. Pierce, I doubt if he'll answer you, though he might answer me. What do you think, Alan?" A smooth black man in a fine suit walked forward from the shadows. As he regarded the corpse, it sat up, creaking with a wet, sticky noise. Matt jumped back as Alan's mouth worked, but no sound came out. "Oh, sorry, Alan. Throat dry?" Mr. White asked. He peered around, grabbed a cup of liquid, and splashed it into Alan's mouth. It dribbled past his bared teeth and down his chin. "So, Alan, what happened to you?" The corpse sat for a second, then it said in a strangled, dry voice,
"The black!"
The dead sometimes are not terribly verbose. Mr. White smiled at Matt.
"A black! Fire! Hot! Black!"
"Thank you, Alan." Mr. White turned from the corpse to face Matt. Alan fell back with a thud, once again nothing more than meat. "That's really all I needed. I already knew it was a... what do you call them now? Oh, yes, a skin." "A skin? I'm sorry, but who are you?" Matt looked at the corpse he had seen speak, then back at the man in front of him. "Of course, my apologies. You may call me Mr. White. And a skin is a type of a demon. It wears the skin of a person it kills to allow it to walk around this plane." It's the air here, or rather, the oxygen. Demons are made of fire, and oxygen is understandably challenging for it. It wears the skin to protect it. But the skin only lasts for a few days, then it burns." "Oh, I'm not sure I understand."
"Yes, Mr. Pierce, it's all confusing, I'm sure.
He came from hell. He was called to serve the judge, the man you met this evening to make a deal. Odd he didn't take you up on it, wouldn't you say?"
Your messenger seemed to think so. Matt, there are many things all coming together, and you and Mary Lou are right in the middle. Mr. White glanced back at the corpse for a minute and continued. I have a problem. Well, actually, it's an itch. An itch I've had for some 2,000 years now. It's a bit of unresolved business. I am driven, you see, to fulfill a task. It's my job, and yet for all this time, I could not complete my task. Unable to do what I was created for. I'm sure you can appreciate how fucking frustrating that would be. Mr. White paused. May I look into your eyes? Okay. Yes, let me explain a bit. I can see death in your eyes. He stepped forward and peered into Matt's eye. I recognize the mark I leave behind. You have seen me a couple of times in your life. When you were 12, your dog... Patch?
Patch? Really?
I was 7 when I named him. Give me a break. Mr. White smiled an indulgent smile and returned, looking into Matt's eyes. Yes, well, you saw me later when your grandmother passed. I've always loved that euphemism. Passed. It seems so quiet. Anyway, you've not seen me often. You see, I leave a mark on the eye. More precisely, a little crack or a slice on the iris's edge. I can see all the deaths. They are me, after all. However, when a demon dies, there's nothing to see. You saw Alan die, but it wasn't Alan. It was a demon. Your eyes confirm it. But let's talk about you. Why are you looking for a deal? I want to free Mary Lou from her contract. Very noble, Matt. Her contract. There are some issues with her contract the judge and I are working on. From my perspective, she's contracted to me.
To you?
Yes, she died before her contract with the judge began. Therefore, my claim supersedes his.
Then I want to make a deal with you.
Yes, I suppose. However, as you may have heard, I don't make deals. Not that I don't get offered deals all the time. It's just that no one has anything I want in return. But you do. Well, at least you can get me something I have long wanted.
And what's that?
Oh, we can talk about that in a minute. I need to ask you a question first. What would you be willing to give for Mary Lou's contract?
Anything.
Would you say be willing to die for her?
Yes.
Then, Matt, I do believe we can do business, Death said with a smile.
Chapter 68, A Glitter of a Tear. As he played, he leaned over his beautiful, horrible guitar. His tears fell on the strings, where they sizzled miniature blue flames curling around them with little puffs of smoke. Runic symbols writhed in the air, faded and vanished. The flames danced, running the length of the strings, flared, then went out. When the last grieving chord echoed across the spellbound audience, the thin man in the back was no longer smiling. There was a glitter of a single tear on his cheek. Scowling, with the tip of his finger, he touched the tear and looked at it. With an angry flick of his hand, he tossed the small droplet away, turned, and walked out, leaving a scorched mark on the wall where he had been leaning. The one-eyed dog followed at his heels. John sat for a moment before the silent room. He felt no triumph, no accomplishment for achieving his lifelong goal. He felt nothing at all, only the hollow emptiness of a soul wrung out. No one clapped, no one moved, no one seemed to breathe. He looked over the audience. They knew he'd done it. He had woken the devil and made him cry. They would never know what it cost, the price he had to pay. The guitar dropped from his bloody fingers. It shattered as it hit the stage floor into a million blackened shards. John Whitey Burnett walked from the stage, past the quiet, tear-stained audience, and out of the club. The moonless night outside embraced him and took him in.
Chapter 69. Brian is Afeared. The next morning found Jacob still on the porch. Mary Lou, Gran, Billy, the silver coins, and the judge swirled around his fevered mind all night. When the sky to the east began to lighten, he was no closer to understanding what was going on than when he had sat. His life was separated between before and after Mary Lou's death, before and after the judge. He had defined himself by her blood on his hands and by the deal he had made. The foundation of the world was built around what he understood as truth. Now, it was all unraveling, leaving him with uncertain footing beneath him. Nothing was what it was on the surface. Each concealed a lie. Mary Lou wasn't dead. Gran was a great power. Billy showed up as a skin. The silver coins were somehow involved. And who was the judge? Jacob was in the kitchen drinking his second cup of coffee when Brian stumbled in and plunked down on a chair at the table. He placed a big mug in front of the sleepy giant, who groaned thank you and took a sip. Half an hour later, Brandy came down, her hair sleep-tussled. "Coffee?" Jacob asked. "Hell yeah." Brandy sat across from Brian, flashed a smile of thank you to Jacob, and blew on her hot coffee.
"When are we going to see the judge?"
Brian asked, his voice still croaky with sleep.
"We better find out more about these coins before we do. I think Billy got himself killed over them."
"Yeah, the cops are still all over Billy's place investigating."
"Yeah, for sure. Don't forget, four of theirs disappeared, and they're going to look careful-like. Can you think of any place else he might have stashed more of those coins?"
"Billy came to the bar day before the skin showed up at the farm. He was dirtier than usual."
Brandy got up for more coffee.
"When was this?"
"First thing, he had the hella breakfast and headed out. Seemed to be in a hurry since he ran out without paying. Pissed Frank off big time."
"Any idea what was up?"
"No, he just tore out of there. Ran right past me. Nearly knocked the coffee out of my hand."
"And the next day, the skin shows up at the farm. Which direction did he head?"
"West, up 11.
"So not back to the trailer. Brian, what's west of Frank's?"
"Not much till you get to old Dutch's farm," Brian said.
"Looks like we're going for a drive." "I don't care much for Dutch's dogs."
Brian looked sheepish.
"You're the biggest motherfucker I've ever seen, and you're afeared of his dogs?"
Jacob laughed.
"I ain't afeared of them. They're mean, really mean."
"Ha! Fuck it. Let's go."
Chapter 70. No one ever mentioned. Many people talk about the night Bob Dylan played at Old Tom's back room, but no one ever mentions the night John Whitey Burnett woke the devil and made him cry.
Chapter 71. Mary Lou Goes to the River. The light of her phone shone up at Mary Lou's face, giving her a ghoulish appearance. She clutched it and peered around the dark alley. She had walked this alley hundreds of times at all hours of the night and had never been nervous before. Now she was afraid. not of the alley or the dark or what might lurk there. She was afraid of having to meet death and its ultimate outcome. She needed Matt to be at her side. She waited, glanced at her phone, peered down the alley, then rechecked her screen. Once more, she dialed Matt's number and heard his voice. She spoke before realizing it was his voicemail. She groaned. Where was he? She checked the alley. She called again, and again she got voicemail. She hung up, then immediately redialed. I'm here. She left a message and hung up. She waited, then dialed again. Where are you? She hung up and looked down the alley, hoping to see Matt rushing toward her. She redialed his number. Matt, I'm here. I thought you were going to meet me. Where are you? She nearly screamed out of fear and disappointment and frustration. It was time. She had put it off as long as she could. Straightening her shoulders, she headed into the Aturian. The club was silent and dark. Behind a curtain was a painted steel door she had seen Jean go through. She stepped forward and pushed the door, expecting it to be locked. However, it slid open easily. A light came on, revealing a metal staircase descending. These were the stairs the Grey Lady had told her about. Thinking of Matt, she moved forward, her loneliness and her fear a physical weight in the pit of her stomach. Her footsteps clanged loudly, echoing into the darkness down the unceasing U-shaped cement stairwell. Hands had worn the railing back to bare shiny metal over many years of multitudes descending. Landing after landing, a light would come on with a loud mechanical click as she reached them. She quickly lost count of how many she had passed. Above her, the lights went out sequentially, making her feel like the darkness was settling down on her, pushing her deeper into the earth. The stairs ended at a door with a solid chrome bar. It made a loud bang as Mary Lou pushed the door open, slamming against the wall. The sound echoed down the hallway that stretched away from her into the dark. The air hung heavy and reminded her of an abandoned building or factory. It was dry and it smelt of dust and old cardboard. Every 10 paces, a light in front of her snapped on, illuminating her way. Behind her, the light clicked off, returning the hallway to darkness. Overhead in the shadows, pipes of different sizes, glossy, black, dirty white, and winding through them thinner cables of silver, blue, and red. They seemed to squirm as if alive. She concentrated on not letting panic take over and walked with a measured stride. She knew if she allowed herself to walk faster, in no time she'd be running, fully out of control. Eventually, she stood facing a greenish-gray door inset with a window of frosted glass. She stepped through the doorway just as the hallway behind her plunged into black. Here was yet another landing and another set of stairs. Set low in the walls were small, weak lights that hardly lit the way down. There was a slight odor that she knew but at first could not place. After several steps, she realized it was the cloying smell of burning candle wax. The concrete felt very solid and slightly rough underfoot. Her footfalls, compared to the last staircase, were nearly silent, but she became painfully aware of how loud her labored breathing seemed. The air felt hushed, as if the building above her weighed down, making it thicker. Panic edged closer, making each breath harder. She paused briefly, hand against the stone wall, the dark surrounding her. Feeling extremely alone, she continued walking down. A brighter light ahead finally showed the end of the stairs with an imposing wooden door with a torch burning fitfully at either side. Skeptically, she examined the door. Made of dark, heavy wood banded with heavy wrought iron and massive black hinges. Large gouges laced the door as if somebody had attacked it with an axe, hacking violently at the wood. The lower portion of the door was blackened and scorched. She looked at it, wondering how she was going to open it. There was no handle or keyhole. Experimentally, she pushed on the scarred surface, expecting impossible resistance, but it swung open easily and quietly. She took a cautious step forward onto a broad floor lit by several iron braziers. She strained to see past the pool of flickering light, down the hewn stone steps that disappeared into the deeper blackness. The air smelled fresher here, with a hint of dampness. From where she stood, she had a sense she was surrounded by great vastness. She realized she was high up on the side of a huge underground cavern whose far walls she could not see. She started down, her eyes slowly adjusted to the gloom. In the distance, she could barely see what looked like far-off mountains, which could not be. The weak light from the open door and the braziers cast a long shadow that dissipated with each step she took and merged with the surrounding darkness. Step after step took her deeper into the cavern. As the light behind her faded, her pupils opened wider, and she became aware of another light source. She stumbled to a stop and gasped as she realized that above her was not a cavern ceiling made of stone, but rather a vast night sky littered with thousands of stars. A slight breeze moved her hair as she stared up, mouth slack. "Fuck," she said, hardly believing what she was seeing. She continued to descend the interminable stairs. Then her footing shifted and sunk into the surface. She staggered on the uneven ground and bent to look. Reaching down, her fingers slid through black sand, cool and dry. She glanced back up the way she had come. The stone stairs disappeared into the darkness, and all around her was sand that sparkled in the starlight. In the distance stood three figures and a bull moose at the foot of a colossal pier that jutted out into the black river that snaked through the Stygian world. Moored there was a great ship. She walked toward them. After several paces, she recognized her boss, Jean, standing under the expanse of antlers. Beside him stood a tall, handsome man dressed in black that she did not know, but her eyes went straight to the last man in the party. Her heart leapt. Matt was here after all. At the sight of him, her fear evaporated. She broke into a run, kicking up sand with each step.
"She's here."
Jean was the first to notice Mary Lou.
"Ah, at last. It's all down to timing," Mr. White said.
"Let me talk to her." Matt left the group to meet her.
"She will not like what you have to tell her," Mr. White said after him.
"No, she won't," Matt said over his shoulder as she approached. He ran the last few steps, lifting her off her feet. He hugged her.
"Matt, I was so worried. I didn't know where you were."
"I'm sorry, Mary Lou. I had to finalize a few details."
"Details?" Mary Lou asked as Mr. White approached.
Mr. White stepped forward.
"It's so nice to meet you. You may call me Mr. White." He extended his hand to her.
She took it briefly, glancing at Matt with a question in her eyes.
"It amuses me that you, who have walked on the black sand of my world, should be the impetus of all this. That you would reveal this wonderful twist with a little push shall get me one of my long-desired goals. You seem so, forgive me, ordinary, and yet you have inspired such passion."
"I'm sorry, sir, I don't understand."
"No matter, Mary Lou. Now I believe you and your fine man here have something to discuss."
He smiled and stepped back to stand with the moose and Jean.
"Matt, what's going on? Where are we?"
"Mary Lou, it's been a hell of a week. So much has happened, I can't begin to tell you how weird this is for me. I found out that I don't really know anything. I know one thing for sure. I love you."
"Let's go on a road trip." Matt kissed her and smiled.
"A road trip? What's going on?"
She looked down the black beach at the individual standing there.
"Yeah, it's the perfect escape for a shitty deal."
Matt smiled a big smile and put his arm around her as Mr. White stepped up.
"Matt, my boy, please take my car. She's perfect for a road trip."
Behind her, a beautiful 1959 old Super 88 sat looking as if it was speeding along. The long, low car stood out starkly against the black sand. Mary Lou had never seen a car quite like it. Taking her by the hand, Mr. White led her around to the passenger door. He kissed her hand, an antique gesture that made her feel awkward. Matt sat in the driver's seat, admiring the delicate chrome gear shift and the thin, white steering wheel. He started the big V8 and slipped it into gear.
Stories from a Hard Place is a narrative podcast.
Every Tuesday and Thursday, R.A. Jacobson presents another chapter from Hard Place, read by the author. Opening music by Noah Zachron. Production copyright by R.A. Jacobson, 2022. If you'd like to support Stories from a Hard Place, please go to patreon.com/hardplace. If you would like a book version, either ebook or print, you can find it anywhere books are sold, including your local library. You can find links to all these and much more at Dead Cat Studio. That's deadcatstud.io. Thanks for listening. Keep the shiny side up.